Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. On the show tonight, we'll talk with running back Booby Dixon, Anthony Dixon, the free agent signed from San Francisco. Travis Bogan is the author of Keepers of the Flame, a look at NFL films. We'll talk with him at 8 o'clock. And at 8:30, Dr. Michael Kropp, CEO of Independent Health, to talk about their new partnership with the Buffalo Bills.
Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson, touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are back live on the air until 9 o'clock tonight, and happy to be here, happy to have you listening in. Like to have you call in. The phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. You heard the rundown. Anthony Dixon, Bills running back, Booby Dixon. Wants to be called Booby. We'll call him Booby. He'll join us at 7:30 tonight. Travis Bogan, the professor and author of the book, Keepers of the Flame, about NFL films. He'll be joining us at 8 o'clock. That's an interview we did a couple of months ago. It was so good, we're going to replay it because I was just watching on NFL Films the other day. They have a pretty good series up on the NFL Network these days about the decades. And one of the decades they did most recently was the 60s. And just some amazing outtakes and stuff that didn't quite make it to the air during the 1960s from NFL Films. Just some really good stuff. I was just watching that the other day. Got me thinking about NFL Films. So we go back to Travis Bogan at 8 o'clock. At 8:30 tonight, Dr. Michael Kropp. He is the president, CEO of Independent Health. The Bills and Independent Health announcing a partnership today. We'll hear more about that as the show goes along, and he'll be in studio with us tonight at 8:30. Want to hear from you, as we said, and the topic on the table deals with the topic that, you know, unfortunately, everybody's talking about, Marcell Dareus, Bills defensive tackle Marcell Dareus, who's found himself more trouble. Released last night, right around this time, a story in the Buffalo News. More is known about it now, and we know now that Marcell Dareus is going to be away from the Bills' OTAs. He won't be back until the mandatory minicamp, which is coming up on June 17th, which is 2 weeks from today. The reason, of course, as you know by now, Dareus taken into custody by police in Hamburg on Friday after he was involved in a car accident stemming from an apparent drug race. Dareus charged with reckless endangerment, second degree, a Class A misdemeanor, along with reckless driving and participating in an illegal speed contest. Those are misdemeanors. He also has some vehicle and traffic violations. Marcell Dareus not at the organized team activity today. And after the OTA, head coach Doug Marrone talked about Dareus and what the plan is moving forward.
I've been working with him. He's dealing on a lot of personal issues, too. I spoke with him at length. You know, we spent a lot of time together. Talking about a lot of things. You know, as of now, you know, he's not going to be attending the OTAs, but he'll be attending the mandatory mini camp when we come back. I just want to make sure that I'm clear that everyone understands that I believe in Marcell, and I will do everything I can to make sure that we can get him on the right track. Really, that's the situation. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of personal talk, and that's really all I'm going to really comment on. And I understand that you'll ask some questions afterwards, but I'm going to keep repeating that, you know, the situation, the conversations that we had are between us. We're working this thing. I'm disappointed in all of our players anytime any of one of us, including myself, when we make poor decisions. And you know, it's a reflection of the team, which is a reflection of me, and it's a reflection on this organization.
That's head coach Doug Marrone, and that's his plan. Marcell Dareus, and kind of a joint decision, will not be around for the rest of the OTAs for 2 weeks. They expect him back for the start of the mandatory minicamp 2 weeks from today on June 17th. And that's the question we throw out to you. What do you do if you're the Buffalo Bills with Marcell Dareus? What do you do moving forward? I've heard responses ranging from release him, cut him immediately, to nothing, ignore it. The answer, I believe, lies somewhere in the middle. You can't ignore his recent trend of running afoul of the law. You can't ignore it. And the arrest from an incident last Friday, very serious, very dangerous, very reckless, almost self-destructive behavior. You can't just ignore that. You can't walk away from that. Do you release him? No. I mean, and it has nothing to do with his talent as a player. He's a very talented player, Pro Bowl performer. But he clearly is a guy, a young guy, who needs some help. And we know his background with his brother being murdered a couple of years ago. We know where he comes from. We know what happened to him recently. So you can't release him. I mean, that'd be not just cold-hearted. It would be immoral, I think, to release him at this time, to walk away from him. But somewhere in the middle is the answer for Marcell Dareus. What it is, let's hear from you. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter with your ideas at John Murphy Show. I mean, if you believe that he should be released, or if you believe that you just should ignore this transgression, then go ahead and call us up and convince me of that. I don't think either one of those extremes is the right answer. I think what has to happen here is probably, I like what the Bills did today. I like what Doug Marrone did today. A two-week break, essentially, for Marcell to, you know, get himself together, to acknowledge and realize that things are going down the wrong path here, that he's got a great career in front of him, and he can't afford in any sense to let it slip out of his hands, that he is engaging in extremely destructive, self-destructive, and dangerous and reckless behavior. And you got to get his attention. You got to get his attention to stop doing it, to start thinking about his career, his life, his family, his teammates, all of whom care a great deal for Marcell Dareus, his coaches. You got to get his attention. Is that coddling him? I don't think so. By getting his attention, I think what you're doing is say, hey, this must stop. This must end. This is not acceptable. There's most likely going to be some sort of sanction, whether it's a penalty, a fine, or a suspension of some sort, coming as a result of either this incident or the incident in Alabama a couple of weeks ago. So that will help get his attention, too. But you have to draw the line and say, this must stop now. No more second chances. No more, if you don't cut that out, I'm going to do something. No, it's got to stop now. And I think there's got to be a way, maybe you know it, but there's got to be a way to get his attention and convince him that this is not acceptable. If you have thoughts on that, give us a call. Phone lines open, 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. We've had a couple of tweets already on this issue. Mike Brockenshire says, can we afford to get rid of him? Well, afford, I don't know what afford means. From a cap standpoint, from a football standpoint, I really think those considerations should take a back seat now. You can't afford for his sake to get rid of him because he clearly needs some guidance and some help. So, no, you can't afford to get rid of him, and he can't afford to walk away. Benjamin Cota tweets in, what should we do with Marcell Dareus? Nothing. He's driving fast with a teammate at 3:30 in the afternoon, so what? I think that's kind of burying your head in the sand. Driving fast, allegedly drag racing on a busy suburban street, 3:30 in the afternoon. I've driven down Mile Strip Road all the time. I know how busy it gets. There are people there. There are people going to the McKinley Mall there. You can't be drag racing driving that fast so that you'd be driving in a reckless manner. You just can't. You can't do that. So, no, you can't ignore it. So what? It is a big deal. If nothing else, it is cause for alarm. Like, come on. Eric Haas tweets in, find him a best friend on the payroll who will keep him out of trouble. You know, that's one way that I think this could be addressed. And it's easier said than done. But I think the most effective way to deal with troubled players like this, there's all kinds of, as we know, league rules about player behavior, player conduct policy. There's all kinds of steps you go through when it comes to, if you do this, you get this. If you violate this rule, you get this. I don't think there's a more effective way of changing behavior than peer pressure, than having a teammate. As Brian Worthy tweets in, or Eric Haas tweets in, a best friend on the payroll, keep him out of trouble. Having a teammate to look out for him, to say, this isn't working. You have to change right now. And I think if they can do that as quickly as possible, whoever it is, teammates, to get on his side and to get on his case, and to let him know that this is unacceptable. I think that would go a long way towards doing it. Brian Worthy tweets in, get him some help. Never give up on a talented player before exhausting all options. If suspended, it's next man up. Yeah, you don't give up on any person, really. The fact that Marcel is talented, I think, gives him, quite frankly, a longer leash when it comes to exhausting all options. They want him to get better. They want him to be effective as a player and as a man because they know, we all know how good he can be. We all know what the Bills have invested in him financially and in terms of a draft pick. And that plays into it, too, and that's just the way it is. If he were a fringe roster player, would he have as many chances? Absolutely not. That is the way it is. But he is a talented player. Moreover, he is a guy who needs some help, I think, to realize his potential, and it's he's going down the wrong path. Couple of other tweets. Kyle Hamanowski, realize he's human and think of all the talent he has. Okay, he's human. There's no question about that. He's made some big mistakes. There's no question about that. You can't walk away from it. You cannot walk away from it. Bills' number one fan tweets in, the Bills should do everything they can do to help. Darius must realize he has a problem and want help in order to fix it. Yep, he's got to acknowledge that he's got a problem. That's where I think the peer pressure comes in. Adam Yancic tweets in, keep him. Not give up a player of that caliber. Yep, I agree. Well, there's a lot that this place can go. This discussion can go. Charlie Oswald let Marcel get his head straight. He's young. He has a bright future. No one will remember this in a couple of years. It's not a huge deal, but again, it's the pattern that bothers me. The pattern that first came to light late last year when he missed the meeting times and was held out of the early portion of games. And then the arrest on felony charges in Alabama a couple weeks ago. And now these charges in Hamburg with what? Speeding? Yep. Drag racing? Maybe. Yep. There's an arrest there. But again, the pattern, I think, is what is alarming more than anything else. Well, you may have a thought on this. Give us a call. The phone line's open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I applaud what Doug Marrone said today, and we're going to hear more of it in a second, when he talked about not giving up on Marcel Darius, not just walking away from it, and trying to fix this. It's part of his job is to fix this, and I think that's what the Bills are going to try to do. Here's more of what Doug Marrone said. He was asked if there's going to be disciplinary action and if, in fact, keeping Marcel away from the OTAs amounts to disciplinary action by the coach.
No, it's not. It was a thing that we've talked about. How do we move forward in best dealing with being able to make better decisions and doing what we're doing? So I actually told that to the team. It wasn't a disciplinary action of leaving him from there. Thank you for clarifying that.
Would you qualify that as kind of like a mutual decision? I mean, was it his choice saying, I don't think I should be there and get my act together kind of thing? Or
No, I wouldn't say that. He obviously, he's trying to do the right thing. I promise you that. At the same time, I have to be careful in my language. Like, in other words, if I said, hey, I'm going to do this, we're in a voluntary period. So I have to be very careful of my language with the league. But to try to answer your question best, it was both of us sitting down and talking, how do we move forward? How do we get this thing right? Working together, all right, coming up with that decision.
Head coach Doug Marrone on Marcel Darius. The coach was also asked about his reaction when he found out the other day about Marcel Darius' arrest in Hamburg. He was asked about his reaction and how he felt about that.
When any player makes a poor decision, I always think where I made a mistake. So that's the truth. And I just feel that way. And, and when I make decisions to not play people, bench them and all that other stuff, I do it because winning, don't get me wrong, my job is to win, and winning is important, but it's not as important as trying to help somebody, all right? I'd rather, lose games, all right, and do the right thing in my mind. Not everybody else's mind, not the media's mind, not the public opinion's mind, my mind. I'd rather do the right thing. I can live with myself because at the end of the day, I'm the one that's going to have to live with myself, and that's just the way I treat it. And right, wrong, and different, it might not be what people want to hear, but that's more important to me, trying to do the right thing and help people than it is to win.
How would we clarify it just so we're accurate? Because you can't be excused from voluntary minicamps because they're voluntary.
I never said it.
No, exactly. Right. So how,
are you trying to get me fined?
No, I'm actually I
know the wording's tough. It really is. So like I said, it's not a punishment.
Yes.
Not a punishment. I didn't say, look, I need to get you out of here.
Yes.
I didn't say that. Okay? I didn't say, I need you to stay. And he say, I don't want to stay. It was a conversation of, okay, all right, how are we going to move forward? How are we going to get this thing done? I'm taking a bigger role in it. I'm becoming more personally responsible.
That's head coach Doug Marrone. Again, I like his response, not walking away from Marcel Darius and the trouble. And believe me, it is a headache. There's no question about that. It is going to be a headache probably for a little while for this team until Marcel sorts it out. I mean, you would imagine that they're all going to be on pins and needles saying, we're hoping Marcel is good now. We're hoping this doesn't happen again. And the easy way out, I think, would be to walk away from him, to cut him out of spite and say, enough, we've had enough, we're not dealing with this anymore. I applaud what they're doing, trying to, first of all, get him away and get him to, whatever assistance he might need to get that going on, and then to stick with him and see if he can be helped, regardless of the talent he has. Let's take a call. Let's go to Jake and Elma. Hi, Jake, you're on the air.
And I think Marcellus's problems are directly related to his brother dying. Didn't seem to have any problems before that, but ever since then, that's when all these incidents came. I think there's some connection there. And that's where he needs some help connecting with that.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, we don't know. I don't know that, Jake, I don't know that Marcel's ever indicated that. But clearly, who wouldn't it bother the way his brother died a couple of years ago? He's 24 years old now. He was 22 then. It's got to bother him. But that can't be the excuse. That can't be, you can't keep saying, well, I'm still distraught about that. You know, you have to own up to your own actions, I think. That's what I think the Bills are trying to get him to face. Jimmy in Depew. Welcome, Jimmy. What's on your mind about Marcel Darius?
I think the coach is going about it the right way. I like his approach. I think Darius is a young guy. I think he's going through a stretch where he's making some bad choices. And I read in the newspaper that the Cowboys, when they were worried about Dez Bryant, they went out and hired three people that became around-the-clock watchers. And when he wasn't practicing, somebody was with him to help him make decisions and say, don't do this and don't do that, to keep him out of trouble, and he hasn't been in trouble. And, I mean, this guy is a third overall pick. He's very valuable to the team. I don't think you just get rid of him. I think you try to help him. And then I think also by doing that, you're showing all the other guys on this team that you are a team. You stand behind your players. So I like that.
I like it too. Thanks, Jimmy. I got to look into that Dez Bryant thing because I do recall a discussion about that. I got to see exactly what went on down there in Dallas. Here's Mike in Rochester. Mike, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Steven?
Okay.
Hey, yeah, the coach has the right idea, as somebody else said. Take football out of this. There's numerous perspectives. And as I related to you offline, I had problems when I came over from Vietnam. Yeah, there's a lot of grieving that goes on. This man lost a brother. He's got problems. He's acting it out. He's trying to deal with it in the best way he can. He's an adrenaline junkie. When football's not going on, he's found something else to make himself to get that buzz. But in the same light, you know what? I had a staff sergeant that gave a damn. He kept battering away at my I don't care facade. He kept going and going and going until a certain point in time, I realized I had a problem. At that point in time, then it was up to me to take and find solutions to that problem. I had lots of help. This young man here has a Bills organization behind him. He's got a lot of help. And you don't give up on somebody. And again, you take football out of it, you take it from a perspective that this is another human being. He's crying in the wilderness. Reach out and you give the guy a hand up the hill. And that's how we get to the top of the hill, is joining hands and all working together to get to that place.
Like what you're saying there. Thanks, Mike. Jim in Wheatfield. Jim, your thoughts on Marcel Darius.
Yeah, hi, how you doing? Yeah, I think the coach is handling it as best as he can. But I think, if you fast forward to the future a little bit, to the beginning of the season, it's pretty likely that he's not even going to be there. Possibly be suspended for as many as four games. And how does that affect the team and his players? He's really letting them down. I mean, he's a great talent, and he might even be able to win a game or help win a game by himself, but he's not going to be there for these guys. And that's what the real disappointment, I think, is, because this is such an important season for this team, and they're relying on a lot as far as a team unity, and I think he's let his teammates down by doing this over the last few weeks, and he's really got to look in their eyes at the beginning of the season and answer to them.
Yeah, Jim, you know? I can't disagree. I think you're absolutely right. He has let him down because, first of all, now because of the distraction factor and, you know, the contributing to the perception that, you know, that things are running amok here, which they are not. But it doesn't help when Marcel Darius does this, a couple of transgressions over the last few weeks. And then to, you know, the possibility of a suspension, taking him off the field, one of the best players on the roster, off the field possibly for an undetermined amount of time. You're right. He is letting his teammates down. And I'm sure that's part of the message that Coach Marone said he talked with him at length last night for a long time. And I'm sure that was part of the message. Look what you're doing to your teammates. Because I do think, it should have sunk in last December when he was held out of a couple of games. Apparently he did not. But, you know, there is consequences for his action. And in many respects, they're very selfish actions to get himself in trouble like this. E.J. Manuel, his teammate, his quarterback, was asked about the Marcel Darius situation today. And here's what E.J. Manuel had to say.
Marcel and I, we actually live at the same place, you know, so he and I talk quite often. And I think the biggest thing is we're happy he's healthy. You know, obviously it was a tough situation, but I think this is where you need to be supportive. You definitely want to talk to him. You don't want to shun him or not talk to him because of what happened. We're all there for him. He knows that. But so now is just a good time for him to, you know, get his thoughts together and come back strong for the season. That's when we need him.
What was your reaction when you heard about this latest incident?
Just shocked. You know, the biggest thing was seeing that he was here with us, a few days ago, and he was healthy. He was walking around. He was fine. And he was working out and everything. So that was the biggest thing to see that he was fine.
E.J. Manuel, Bills quarterback, talking about Marcel Darius. Later on, E.J. was also asked about the pattern of behavior, the recent problems, the string of problems that Darius has had, and whether he's worried that Marcel Darius can't quite seem to get his act together.
Marcel's a very smart person. Marcel's his own man. He's a grown man as well, so he's going to make the decisions he wants to make. And, that's, one incident. You know, he had something else prior to that, but, he's still young. We're all young. You know, we all make mistakes. And, I'm just thankful that he didn't get hurt to the point where he couldn't, redeem himself. But Marcel, I have more than enough confidence in him that he'll be back and be ready to go for us.
Outside, a lot of people are saying these are actions that where you're letting your teammates down. Is there a feeling or a sense of that in your life?
What do you mean? Who's letting who down? Like, what do you,
Marcel,
when?
With the two situations within a week.
Right.
And he's letting his teammates down.
Well, hey, I mean, we're all grown men. You know, at the same time, this is a team. But, we're not going to be upset at Marcel if he makes a decision. You know, it's still his decision to make. But like I said, I'm just happy he's healthy. You know, that's the biggest thing for me. I know he'll still be here for us on Sundays when we need him during the season. That's all that matters.
E.J. Manuel talking about his teammate Marcel Darius. And I know there's, difference of opinion on what to do, and that's why we asked the question, what should the Bills do? A tweet from someone who identifies himself as Bills' number one fan, the Bills should do everything they can do to help. Darius must realize he has a problem and want help in order to fix it. I agree with that. And yet Cliff Fazzolari tweets in, run him out. He could have killed someone you love with his stupidity. Send a message. He's an idiot. I don't know what the message would be other than you made a bad mistake here and we're not going to tolerate it anymore. Good luck. You're on your own. I don't know if that's the right message. But people disagree with that. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to switch gears when we come back and talk with one of the brand new Buffalo Bills. He was a free agent signee back in March, and we had a chance to talk to him back in March when he signed his contract, but not for long. Tonight, we're going to sit down for a long time with our next guest. He is Anthony Dixon, Booby Dixon, the running back. He's been really an outstanding performer in the first four sessions of organized team activity. And we'll talk to him about that and about his background in college and with the San Francisco 49ers. Booby Dixon, Bills running back, up next. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, we're live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Another day of OTAs as the next week of OTAs begins. And joining us in studio, one of the standouts of the organized team activity so far, running back Anthony Dixon, Booby Dixon. We were supposed to call you Booby, right?
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
It came from Mississippi State, my freshman year. The same year the Friday Night Light movie. And, I was just out there making plays, a young guy. You know, teammates probably didn't know what to call me. And, I was just making plays. Everybody started calling me Booby. Next thing you know, Coach Kroom, Sylvester Kroom, my college coach, he started calling me that, and it just stuck. We just ran with it. It just stuck.
It's a good one. You came from Terry, Mississippi. Where is Terry?
It's I-55 South, right about 10 minutes from Jackson, the capital.
Okay.
Where I actually grew up at, where I was born at, and kind of went to high school in Terry, and the rest is history.
And you were recruited by several, you know, major powers. Yep. You chose Mississippi State. Tell us about that decision.
Well, you know, I was a hometown kid, you know, and I grew up watching all the Mississippi State greats, Jerry Norwood, Wayne Mackin, DeCenzo Miller, you know, Fred Smoot, you know, and yep. I wanted to go up the street and represent, you know. That's what it was about, you know. And I went and visited Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss, a lot of surrounding schools, and I just felt like my place was Mississippi State.
You could not regret it, I think, when you look at what you produced there and how much you played. You started right from your freshman year, basically.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't take it back for nothing, you know, and it was a great experience, you know.
Tell me about the what you learned there under Coach Kroom, and what were the best parts of Mississippi State for you?
He just kind of taught me how to grow up, in a sense, you know. I was a little wild coming in, and he just kind of helped me settle that down. Like, we had talks almost every day, and he just taught me just how to, you know, how to present myself and just how to play ball, period. You know, how to grind, you know, how to bring my work hat every day, and I love him for it.
You led your team. You led Mississippi State in rushing all 4 years you were there, and you had a lot of carries. You were like a workhorse back mm-hmm. for them, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that. I mean, did you ever feel like they're wearing me out down here?
No, I love it, man. I love it. You know, every time I would always tell Coach, you know, I'm your guy, you know. Feed me, and I'm produced for you, you know. I feel like I'm war daddy. You know, I love to be out there. I love the contact. I love the physical part. That's my favorite thing, you know. I played basketball, I played baseball, but it didn't stick because football was more physical. I got a chance to get a chance to, you know, hit on people sure. and, you know, do all like little type of stuff like that.
We're with Boobie Dixon, Bills running back, a free agent signee this past spring. Coming out in the draft, you lasted until the sixth round. Did you think you'd go earlier than that?
Oh, yeah, man, I did, you know.
What happened?
After leading the league and rushing and,
yeah.
you know, all that type of stuff, it was very disappointing. I can admit that. I got through it, you know, and I'm just out to prove that I'm one of the best players in this league. You know, I really do feel like that. I haven't got all my opportunity, I feel like, to show that. But I really do feel like I'm one of the best players in this league. And that's why I came here, to try to get a small opportunity so I can get out there and show that.
Why do you think you didn't go as early as you thought you might? Why six?
I mean, probably some off-the-field issues.
Okay.
You know, I had a couple of those coming out, and I think it kind of hurt me.
The Niners, it seems, was a pretty good place to get your career started. Number one, you were on you started there with Coach Singletary, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually Coach Harbaugh comes in, mm-hmm. and the Niners kind of took off once he arrived, didn't
they? Oh, yeah, it did. You know, we kind of got everything together. You know, he brought in a great plan as far as X's and O's. You know, he had great principles and rules that we followed, and, you know, we just kind of took off. You know, we built that chemistry, and on top of that, we was physical. We went at each other every day in practice and made each other better. You'd have thought we hated each other in practice, but it eventually made us better. And on game days, teams just couldn't keep up with the physical nature we had, and we just beat teams to sleep.
What did you learn from Frank Gore?
Oh, man, Frank is a grinder. You know, I couldn't take nothing away from him. He a grinder. You know, he work hard. You know, he prepare hard. He a smart guy. He take pride in blocking, you know, and it's just everything about him. You know, he take a lot of pride in, you know, being ready on game day and being able to, you know, go the long haul. You know, that's the kind of reason why I didn't get on the field, because he wanted to play all the snaps and be out there all game. And, you know, I can't fault him for it. It was his job to lose, you know, but I had fun. You know, I don't regret being down there. You know, three straight championships, one Super Bowl. It was a great experience.
Tell me about the Super Bowl experience with the Niners. You didn't come out on top, but just to play in that game, and a remarkably well-played game, you have to feel pretty good about what you learned from that experience.
Oh, yeah, it was a dream come true. You know, as a kid, you know, playing Pop Warner, all the other stuff you dream about, man, I want to play in the Super Bowl one day. Man, I hope we can get there. And we did, you know, and, man, the only feeling, one of the best feelings I can remember, just my heart beating so fast the whole first quarter, even on the kickoff. You look around and the crowd going crazy, and you like, this is it. We made it, you know, and then you just want to go out there and give it your all. And you going, feel like you're going faster than you ever went. You know, you thinking faster than you ever thought before. And it was just an amazing feeling. Like, I couldn't breathe, like, the first 10, 15 plays. I was going to the sideline. I was like, man, do you feel like that? Can you breathe? I can't breathe right now.
And then the lights went out.
Then the lights went out. You know
and
what I'm
you
saying?
Caught your breath, probably, right?
Yeah, and I caught my breath.
What'd you do when the it was like 20 minutes, 25 minutes without lights?
Yeah, we were just sitting there stunned, actually. And I got some homeboys that play for the Ravens, so they was like, y'all cut the lights off because we was beating y'all. I was like, man, we was confused and stunned just like y'all. I said, we don't know what was going on.
You were on the depth chart, kind of stuck behind Frank Gore and Kendall Hunter, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it had to be – frustrating a little bit as much as you wanted to play.
Oh, yeah. It was one of the frustrating things, most frustrating things I ever went through. You know, knowing that I had the talent to be out there, knowing that I was capable of doing it, you know, and never really getting out there for extended time. You know, they'd run me out there one play or third and one or some other plays, you know, not really getting to show my talent. You know, I feel like I'm a great route runner. I feel like I got good hands, decent hands. And I just want a chance to prove that, you know. And I know some people might think I'm crazy for saying I'm one of the best players in the league, but I really do think that, you know. And with the opportunity, I think I can show that.
And I read somewhere where you went to Coach Harbaugh and said, we lost our fullback, let me play fullback. Is that how it went down?
Yeah, and you know, that's another thing. I feel like I'm a versatile guy, you know. Yeah. We did lose our fullback, and I was just trying to get on the field, you know, because I was being active every game and just standing on the sideline watching that wasn't doing it for me. And when I seen Bruce go down, I was like, okay, bam, I think I can get in right there. I know I can do it. I went up to coach. I started practicing. He started getting me in the rotation, and bam, I was doing it. First time ever lead blocking, you know, really having to put my hat on.
Did you change pads or anything?
No,
or?
I didn't. I always wore the big boy pads. Okay. I was always a physical guy. It was just a matter of just learning the system, you know, and getting my stands right. And then once I started doing that, I pretty much, you know, started doing good.
You scored a touchdown in the NFC Championship game last year. Actually, you scored it twice, right? Uh-huh. Tell me about that against Seattle last year.
Oh, man, it was a great feeling. You know, another dream come true, you know, scoring a touchdown in the big game. You know, it was kind of a play where I knew I would have limited opportunities. And, you know, coach sent me in the game. And I was like, man, I'm going in.
So, as a tailback now, right?
As a tailback. Yeah. And so I knew we was running the power play. And I get the ball, and the first time I go up, I felt like I was in, but they ruled me short, and I was like, oh, man. So we run back to the sideline, and Coach Harbaugh was like, I like that.
And now it's fourth down.
Now it's fourth down. He's like, I like that. We're going to do it again. Go do it again. I was like, all right. And this time I'm telling myself, you got to get in this end zone. It don't matter what happens to you, get this ball in the end zone. And I just jumped with all my might, you know, went straight up. And I landed in the end zone.
You dove over the touchdown. And it was like almost 2+ yards. That was a heck of a dive.
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't like a typical 1-yard plunge. That was like a long dive.
Yeah, I sold out. I sold out, man. All out, all in.
And I watched the video earlier today, and you took a hard hit from Cam Chancellor, I think.
I felt that one after the game. You know, he kind of caught me in the reel. But, you know, when you're in a big game like that, your adrenaline pumping, I didn't even feel it. I didn't even feel it till after the game. I sat down, we lost. Like, oh, man, my side kind of hurt a little bit. But it was all right. It was fine.
Boobie Dixon in studio with us, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. So with all of that winning and all of that fun, why was it important for you to leave San Francisco and come here to the Buffalo Bills this spring?
Because, you know, like I said, they wanted me back in the same role, and I just didn't like that idea. You know, and I knew I could play, you know, in this game, especially on offense. And when I went and met with Doug and all the rest of the guys, and they was telling me, we'll let you get the rock. We'll let you come and show what you can do. And that's what all I need to hear, you know. And I came down here. I liked what they was building. You know, it felt like family when I came on my visit. And, you know, I was like, all right, let's do it, you know. And, you know, I knew it was going to be a challenge with us, with them going 6-10 last year. And I just said, you know, I accept that. And I love challenges. So I'm ready to go.
You are playing with a couple of pretty good running backs now, C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson. So the challenge is always there, but it seems like they are giving you an opportunity, at least through 4 OTA sessions, to carry the ball. You've had a lot of carries the first 4 days here.
Oh, yeah. It's been great, you know, because that's what I like to do. You know, I do feel like I am a workhorse, and I love playing the game. You know, I love being out there, you know, conversating with my teammates, you know, the back and forth, making plays, you know, just the grind of it all. I love it. You know, we want to be no other place. So it's just fun. It's been a whole lot of fun. It's been a learning experience, too. I'm studying talking to CJ and Fred, trying to, you know, just figure out how to do things, you know, and how to, and EJ and Thad, all the quarterbacks, trying to figure out what they like and just trying to adjust as fast as I can.
From what I can tell here, Boobie, they've got you running as a tailback, and do they have plans for you to maybe play a little fullback as well?
I don't know. You know, Coach, me and Coach talked about it, and he know that I got experience there. So, you know, just like over there, it'd probably be an emergency thing. You know, that's what I'm guessing. But, you know, like I tell Coach, I'm a football player. You know, I don't even really see myself as a running back no more with all the stuff that I learned how to do since I came in the league. I'm a football player.
What about special teams? You did a lot of that with the Niners, right?
Oh, yeah. I started on special teams for 4 years down there, and I can do anything on that, too. You know, I started returning kicks last year, so if Coach needs me there, I can do that. You know, it's just I learned to evolve my game, you know, not being able to do what I love to do, which is play running back all game, you know. So I learned how to do other stuff to keep me in the league longer, you know, and That's just what I am now.
You seem like a guy who really enjoys playing. I mean, this is OTAs. This is early June.
Yeah.
This is not football season. You seem like you're having a great time out there, even during this part of the year.
Oh, yeah. From being in San Francisco, I learned, you know, we was playing a lot of championship football down there, and this is where it started. In the off season, guys was coming in and going hard. Everybody was showing up, and we was just competing, and you was just making each other better. So when the grind time came for real, it was easy. You know, and this is where it starts right now. You know, that's why I'm out there, you know, going at the speed I'm going, just trying to make my teammates better and make myself better, because I think it starts right now. You know, and then when the season comes, it'll be easy.
Part of OTAs, I think folks should know, is the weightlifting and conditioning, and they usually split it up into two groups, the skill positions, they call them, and the bigs. You lift with the bigs, at least today. Have you done that all the time or just today?
I did it a lot in San Francisco, but I started lifting with the skill a lot here. And that's nothing different with me. I lift with the bigs in San Francisco all the time. You know, I was lifting with guys like Justin Smith, Ray McDonald, you know, all the time. You know, I was in groups with them all the time. So it's nothing new for me.
You consider yourself a big guy.
Yeah, I consider myself a big that can move like a small guy if I got to. You know, I'm versatile.
Hey, Booby, it's great to have you in here.
Sir,
Thank you very much. Good luck to you.
Yes, sir.
Booby Dixon, Bills running back in studio with us. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Really enjoyed talking with Anthony Dixon, Booby Dixon. Once we called Booby, you heard him say that. Not once, but twice, he said he considers himself one of the best players in the NFL. How about that? He's looked good in the OTA so far. He really has. He runs hard. He is big. I mean, he stands out among the running backs, and I love the fact. I went to ask him after practice today to be on the show, and he said, yeah, but I got to lift. And I said, well, the bigs are lifting now, the big guys, the linemen. And he said, yeah, I'm lifting with the big guys. How about that? He considers himself one of the big guys, even though he's a running back. But he runs hard. He's run well in the first couple of OTAs. Another day of OTAs today. We've been talking about Marcell Dareus, not here today. And if you want to talk about that, you can phone us up. Phone lines open at 803-0550 or outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Let's turn our attention over to the guys on the field today for day four of organized team activity. The Bills on the field inside today for the first time, in the field house today for the first time. The highlights from 7-on-7, there was really only one, a laser fired by E.J. Manuel to Sammy Watkins slanting. Sammy was back, his first practice back after missing last Thursday and Friday at the rookie premiere out in Los Angeles. E.J. Manuel, people ask about him. To my eyes, he's been better every day of the OTA so far. You know, not great last Tuesday. Was it Tuesday? Not great the first day last week. A little bit better on Wednesday. A little bit better on Thursday. And I thought he was really good today. 11-on-11, the first 11-on-11 session. The Bills lined up with Robert Woods at one. They had a lot of two wide receiver sets they were working on today. Robert Woods at one wide receiver. And Sammy Watkins at the other one. Spiller, the starting running back. Second play in 11-on-11, the first session. Manuel deep down the middle to Watkins. He got past Jonathan Meeks. A perfectly thrown ball by E.J. Manuel right to Sammy Watkins. Watkins, you don't want to get too excited here, but he really looks good. Great after the catch. Gets open. Makes some sensational catches. E.J. a little bit later on hit a quick pass on the right side. Short pass to Watkins, who snatched it out of the air. Really did a great job of catching it, picked up about 12 yards. Jeff Toole went deep. The Bills' offense was throwing a lot of deep stuff today. Jeff Toole went deep down the middle. A great catch in traffic by Chris Hogan. That one would have gone for like 35 yards or more. Later on, another 11-on-11 session. Jeff Toole hit a sideline deep pass to Mike Williams for about 20 yards. He got past Ross Cockrell, and Duke Williams looked like he should have been over to help. They both heard it from head coach Donnie Henderson. Henderson, to me, seemed agitated today at the deep plays that the Bills were giving up. E.J. Manuel hit a deep pass down the middle to Chris Gregg. Dennis Dixon, deep sideline, and a great catch on the sidelines by Sammy Watkins right in front of us. Tapped his toes down, made a sensational catch on the sideline on a pass from Dixon. Another 11-on-11 session later on. Chris Hogan somehow got wide open, a blown coverage down the left sideline deep, and they found him and hit him easily. And a good pass breakup by Ron Brooks a little bit later on. A deep slant for tight end Tony Moyaki, and Ron Brooks came up to make a great set, a great pass breakup. 11-on-11, one of the final sessions of the day. three wide out set, Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods, and Marquise Goodwin. Woods working out of the slot. All in all, a good solid day. The offense looked better today than it has in any of the three prior OTA sessions, and E.J. Manuel was able to find Sammy Watkins. He talked about having Sammy back at practice today.
Sammy's a great route runner. He always gives you the true route, so as long as you're on point with your drop and your footwork and everything like that, just throw it to a spot and he's going to catch it.
Can you speak to the measure of confidence that that gives you, even though it's so young and your guys' relationship on the field?
Right.
It just seems like you don't even give a second thought about putting it on a spot.
Right. Well, it's not just Sammy. You know, I think all those guys do a great job, you know, as far as count, you know, not counting the steps, but being step-oriented in their routes. I know that's something Coach Hackett and Coach Moore, you know, really implemented for those guys when they coach their routes and things like that. So they're all buying into it, and for us quarterbacks, it's easy. You know, just throw it to that spot, and it's on them to get there.
That's E.J. Manuel talking about Sammy Watkins, how you throw it to a spot, he's going to catch it. Here's the thing with Sammy Watkins. His spot is huge. He makes the quarterbacks look good because he is such a wide catching radius, and he is so good with his hands. Get it near him, and he seems to catch it. Sammy Watkins, another standout day today as he got back onto the field. We'll break for the top of the hour. When we return, the book Keepers of the Flame about NFL films, the origins of NFL films, and why those NFL films are so popular. Travis Vogan wrote the book Keepers of the Flame. He'll be joining us next. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Hour two, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO here until 9 o'clock tonight. That music you hear, instantly recognizable. The NFL Films music. And there's a brand new book that's out in the bookstores now called Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media. The author is Travis Vogan. He is assistant professor of journalism, mass communications, and American studies at the University of Iowa. And Travis Vogan is live on the line with us right now. Travis, good evening. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
The music sends shivers down everybody's spine, doesn't it? Any one of those NFL Films tunes.
Yes, indeed it does. Indeed it does. Very recognizable stuff.
How did that happen? How do we all respond to that music? Or, you know, I can almost recite the words to the Autumn Wind is a Raider for you right now, Travis. I mean, it's ingrained in our consciousness as American sports fans.
Yeah, it's one of those things I think that kind of came at the right time and sort of tapped into some of the trends that were happening in media and cinema at the time as well, and really kind of captured this spirit of football that has now become a real, I don't know, almost a language through which it's represented. I mean, watch a couple of commercials during any football game and you're going to hear that music, promos during the playoffs. It's going to come up anytime you hear that sort of deep baritone that Facenda codified. You're going to think of NFL Films and the way that they encouraged us to imagine pro football.
Travis, the famous Ice Bowl game, Lambeau Field, the Packers and the Cowboys, 1967. I was 10 years old. I did not watch that game, but I feel like I've seen it thanks to NFL Films. And when I was thinking about it, I probably saw more of it and know more about it than somebody who was in Lambeau Field that day or somebody who was watching on television that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you do. I think we all do, because they gave us a kind of, they didn't represent the game in the way that it happened necessarily, but they provided kind of the way that it's remembered. And I think that that's really the important thing about NFL Films and kind of the genius of NFL Films, so to speak, is that they really created how we remember the league and did so in a very kind of artful way, but also in a very strategic and kind of clever way that helped the league to build this mythology that set NFL football apart from all the other sports in the 60s. And as I'm sure you know, and as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, football wasn't the most popular sport when NFL Films started as Blair Motion Pictures in 1962, or when it was incorporated by the league in 1964. Baseball and college football were still had the edge, and football was sitting at number three. And building that language and building that mystique, I think, really kind of helped football to kind of usurp those other two as what it's now called kind of America's game, or what they like to be understood as.
We're on the line with Travis Vogan. He's a professor at University of Iowa. His book is called Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media. Where did you get the idea for this book, Travis, and how did you do your research?
Well, you know, I've always liked sports, and I was studying media at Indiana University as a doctoral student, and one of the things I was primarily interested in was documentary film. And NFL films documentaries are so stylized, you know, they're not these sort of more straightforward documentaries where you have, I mean, they have some of the straightforward elements, but they don't just have kind of the sort of more boring talking heads and whatnot. They're using montage editing and this really lively music and poetic scripts, and I thought it would be something that was kind of interesting to talk about and would help me to get to know a little bit more about the history of sports and its relationship with media. And I just decided as a graduate student, as a doctoral student, to write an essay on them, and my professor actually recommended that I get in touch with NFL Films and see if I could talk to a couple of their producers. And I thought it was a real long shot because I'd kind of grown up watching NFL Films like a lot of folks, and I'd grown up watching Steve Sable do some of the stand-up kind of introductions for some of their pieces. And I thought this guy was a total celebrity and wouldn't let me speak to anybody. But I was on the phone with him within 48 hours, and I got to know more about their films and their company history and the people behind the company. It just became such a fascinating story, not just about sports, but about kind of this family business and about sort of how things like ESPN emerged out of the late 1970s that I really wanted to pursue it as a longer project. So I wound up writing my dissertation on it, and then later wound up turning the dissertation into a book. And so that's kind of how it began.
Steve Sable, the Sables were very cooperative, right? And as you mentioned, the NFL Films began really as a family business. It was Ed Sable and later his son that ran it.
Yeah, it did. It began as just this independent, I mean, really hobby for Ed Sable more than anything. He'd done quite well working for his father-in-law in the overcoat business, actually, in Philadelphia. And he was a filmmaker, and he loved to make home movies. And he would film Steve as a child playing football, film vacations, all that kind of stuff. And he realized when he was starting to make these sort of amateur movies and also kind of trying to turn them around and make a little bit money off them here and there, he realized that the rights to the 1962 NFL championship game were up for auction, and that the previous year the rights had been sold for, I think it was $1,500. The numbers kind of shift depending on who you ask. And he decided, well, you know what, I want to do this, and I'm going to bid twice as much. And I mean, if you know anything about Ed Sable, you know, he's kind of a man of kind of excess and style. And so he bid twice as much. And Pete Rozelle, the commissioner at the time, was a little bit hesitant because he had never heard of this guy. The only, as the story goes, the only experience he listed on his resume was filming his son's peewee football games. But they had a few cocktails over lunch, and Ed Sable, who was a salesman by trade, convinced him to give him a shot. And he wound up filming the 1962 championship game, which was between the Packers and the Giants at Yankee Stadium. And then they bid on the next two and wound up winning the rights to those again and creating similarly successful documentaries about the Super Bowl, or actually the NFL championship as it was known at the time. And then as their films started to get a little bit more popular, he realized that they had a little bit of value, and someone was eventually going to bid beyond his range. He was still an independent filmmaker at that time, and so he convinced Rozelle to bring him in-house. And so the league ponied up a bunch of money. I think it was $12,000 from each team at the time, and they made NFL Films and brought Sable on as the president of the company.
Travis, you mentioned in your book there were a couple of early NFL Films productions that weren't really game highlight films. There was one called Pro Football's Longest Day, another one called They Call It Pro Football. Tell me about the importance of those two documentaries and what they did for NFL Films.
Well, Pro Football's Longest Day was the one of the 1962 NFL championship. And one of the things that Sable, Ed Sable, and then Steve later on wanted to do is they wanted to people to think of these not as just kind of a newsreel, because at the time we were still kind of phasing into the era of television, and at the movies they would have these kind of brief newsreels of college football games with kind of marching band music and the et cetera, and very straightforward kind of recap of the game. And what they wanted people to do is they wanted them to think of these films as movies, right? And The Longest Day was really kind of, or Pro Football's Longest Day was really kind of formatted after a war film. In fact, there was a film that was made earlier that year called The Longest Day. And then they call it Pro Football, which was made in 66, was really kind of NFL Films' coming out party in terms of their aesthetic conventions or their formal practices. And it had the montage editing, it had the slow motion, it had the Sam Spence score, it had the John Facenda voiceover, and a lot of the kinds of things that we now identify as essential to kind of how NFL Films represents pro football. And so those were really kind of important in terms of developing this look that we now kind of take for granted, that we still see a lot of in bits and pieces.
Whose vision was that, Travis, the look of NFL Films?
I think primarily it was Steve Sable. Steve Sable was sort of working part-time for NFL Films when it first started. When Blair Motion Pictures started in 62, and then when NFL Films started in 64. And then he came over and started working full-time, and he really was the one who developed that aesthetic. His dad, Ed Sable, was really more of the businessman, and Sable was kind of, or Steve Sable was more of the artistic visionary and voice of NFL Films. And he wrote most of the scripts. So The Autumn Wind, which you mentioned earlier, that's Steve Sable. And he really wanted people to think of football in these mythic terms and worked pretty hard to do it.
Travis Fogan, our guest, his book is called Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media. You mentioned a moment ago, Travis, how early football highlight films, college pros, sort of had a cheesy marching band soundtrack as far as music is concerned. To get full orchestration and to get a composer like Sam Spence involved, pretty amazing. And I think, you tell me, didn't that go a long way towards sort of branding NFL Films as something different on the sports media landscape?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the things that they were trying to do is make these films seem cinematic and seem larger and bigger and full-bodied in a way that the kind of highlights or the newsreels weren't. And I think that the music and the voiceover were really key in giving it that kind of feel, right? One of the a PR person for NFL Films, and Steve Sable kind of echoed this in certain ways, said NFL Films documentaries aren't seen, they're felt, right? And one of the ways or the key ways that they try to make these things felt experiences, right, is through that orchestration and through that narration and et cetera. And so that's kind of a big way that they were really trying to get people to experience the films rather than just watch them.
At
least that was the goal.
Yeah, you mentioned the narration. Most of us recall John Facenda, who is the most recognizable voice. There have been others, Harry Callis, the guy I used to work with, Jeff Kay from here in Buffalo in Western New York. But when we think of NFL Films narration, we think of John Facenda's voice mostly.
Yeah, the voice of God. Apparently, Ed Sable, sort of, he was familiar with him because he was a newsman in Philadelphia. And apparently, according to Steve Sable, John Facenda really didn't know too much about football. He was a fan. He thought it was okay, but he wasn't really a football aficionado. But he was really interested in cinema, and he was also really interested in music. He was kind of an opera buff in a way, and apparently he would write these cues on the scripts that would say things like profundo and allegro and et cetera to kind of give him a sense of when he really needed to emphasize certain things in the scripts that Sable wrote for him. And apparently, and according to Sable, Steve Sable, Facenda oftentimes didn't even watch the films before he recorded voiceovers for them.
Hey Travis, you mentioned how it started in 62 in the mid-60s, but tell me the role that having NFL Films highlights on halftime at Monday Night Football, which started in 1973, what did that do for NFL Films?
Well, that was huge on a lot of different levels. I mean, Monday Night Football, as you know, was a real kind of breakthrough for the NFL, making it this primetime event. Sports television was really kind of relegated in a lot of ways to the weekends and also to the evenings to a degree. but mostly to the weekends because the primary audience for sports television were men. And so advertisers thought that, well, you know, these guys are going to be working, and so we can get them on the weekends. And Monday Night Football was really a way to try to get a crossover audience, and that's part of the reason why they had Cosell on there and all the banter between him and Gifford and Don Meredith, having celebrities in the booth, etc. And so in a way, what Monday Night Football was a kind of television event, right? Sort of more than just the everyday TV sitcom kind of stuff that you see at night. And NFL Films halftime highlights kind of augmented that status as an event. And strategically, one of the things that they tried to do was to get people to stay tuned in past halftime if a game was a blowout. But also what they did was kind of help to mythologize the league in a way that wasn't necessarily done before, by showing us all the most exciting moments from the previous day's game. And in doing so, kind of encouraging us to watch the next Sunday. So that was kind of a key reason that they used NFL Films for the highlights at the halftime. But also another thing to remember is that this is before ESPN, right? This is before cable. And so one of the things that they were doing were providing us with highlights at a very short remove from when the games took place. Like right now, we're used to seeing highlights immediately. If you're in a stadium with a Jumbotron, you're going to see a highlight the second after it happens in a way, but that wasn't the case in the 70s. And so what they were showing us were things that were happening almost immediately or at least 24 hours or so after they occurred, and really kind of feeding this need for or this desire for more sports media. And I think that in a lot of ways, you know, the highlights, but also in the NFL film syndicated programs that were on during the week, kind of paved the way for this continuous flow of sports media that we're now immersed in and that you and I are now participating in.
That's right. You talk about the syndicated shows. Among the more popular shows, I believe, were the blooper shows. In fact, I think you mentioned in the book that was the biggest selling video. And I like what Steve Sable said about the blooper shows that they did. He said, "We don't take everything so seriously. We're the balloon and the pin. We blow it up and we can puncture it." he was right. Yeah. On as far as the role that the bloopers played, right?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. I mean, one of the things, especially now with NFL films, with all the stuff that's going on in the NFL, all the controversies surrounding head injuries and whatnot, and you see NFL film as this organization that really kind of celebrates the beauty and the violence of pro football, and you see them as kind of this really incredibly earnest and serious organization. But they were also really goofy. And apparently, people were not too, in the league, people in the league offices were not too thrilled about the prospect of bloopers initially. They thought it was going to make players look like fools. And Steve Sable actually screened some bloopers for some of the Philadelphia Eagles players. And apparently, they loved it. Yeah, and so they wound up doing these blooper reels and, you know, to great success. And it's really spawned an entire genre of sports bloopers. But even, I think you can even locate something like America's Funniest Home Videos as kind of the grandchild of NFL Films bloopers as well.
Travis Fogan, our guest, he is the author of the book, Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media. Travis, what about where we are now? And you mentioned the explosion of highlight shows. Highlights are on people's cell phones now in their pockets the moments after they happen. So what role does NFL Films play? And in fact, has NFL Films really passed its heyday?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the NFL now owns NFL Network, and that's part of NFL Media, which encompasses not only the network but also NFL.com and mobile NFL, etc. And they've really kind of adopted more of an immediate kind of ESPN news-driven kind of model. And in fact, when the network started, they were very much modeling themselves after ESPN. They hired Rich Eisen, who's a Sports Center anchor. They hired Steve Bornstein and Howard Katz, who are both ESPN people in the past, and really kind of modeling itself after that format and trying to compete with ESPN. And I think that some of the NFL film stuff kind of faded into the background and has become, at least from a programming perspective, more niche than the norm. And so I think you still see a lot of the more historical kind of epic sorts of things that NFL Films is doing and is known for, but you kind of see the more immediate sort of ESPN formatted and news-driven content kind of overshadowing the stuff that's more identifiably NFL Films. And so it's kind of different, or it's kind of interesting in a way, because you see NFL Films as kind of a precursor to ESPN and 24-hour sports television. And then these things that it kind of precipitated, or that it kind of prompted, have eventually, in a way, kind of taken it over and rendered it less relevant to the contemporary media environment that it helped to create. So, yeah, so I think that in the span of National Football League's media operations, NFL Films is kind of fading to the background. I don't know if they'd admit that, but I think that if you watch the NFL Network for a couple of days, it's pretty apparent. But they still, you know, they still do a lot of historical content, and more NFL Films is kind of supporting the more news-driven kind of stuff. So, like, the Top 100, those kinds of things that don't look like NFL Films but are actually created by NFL Films.
Travis, it seems like your book, it kind of deals in an overall sense with how NFL Films created a kind of romanticized mythology of the National Football League. Is that to say that what was portrayed in NFL Films was not really true? Did we not get the true essence of the game? Because some might argue those low-level sideline shots with blood and sweat and tears and anguish and emotion might really be the essence of the game. What do you think?
Well, that's a really good point, John, and I think you're right to an extent. But I just think it's important to realize that these are films that are produced from a particular perspective and with a particular goal in mind. And I think football is a great game. I really like football. I'm a Seahawks fan. I'm from the Northwest. I had a great year with football this year. But I think it's important to remember that this is a company within a company that has a bottom line, right? And for all the film's beauty, for all the films, the ways that the films kind of give you the chills or whatever, they're also organized around the effort to make the NFL look good in a way that's going to help it to maximize its revenues, right? Help it to build its audience, etc. And so I don't necessarily know if it would be totally accurate to say that it's not part of what the NFL means, or that those things aren't part of the NFL's meaning, but just to keep in mind that these are things that are created with a particular purpose in mind. And I think the beauty of the game is one of those purposes, but I also think selling the sport and differentiating it from other sports is also a big part of that purpose, and maybe ultimately a bigger part of that purpose. But, I mean, I'll let other folks decide that.
Yeah, it seems like whatever the purpose that you described, one of those purposes, NFL Films succeeded on all counts. Travis, it's an interesting book. We thank you for coming on the show tonight to talk about it with us. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.
Travis Vogan is Assistant Professor of Journalism and Mass Communications and American Studies at the University of Iowa. His book is Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media. It is published by University of Illinois Press. It's available, obviously, at Amazon.com or in bookstores. Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media by Travis Vogan. We thank Travis for coming on with us. That interview a couple of months ago aired on the show, and a pretty good interview. As I said, I was thinking about it because of what's on NFL Network these days. They've got a special series about the NFL in the 60s. Which is kind of in my wheelhouse, being of a certain age, and just the incredible archival video they have, and film, really, of the games in the 60s and the features they did back then. It's an amazing collection. And one thing, I should have talked to Travis about this when we did the interview. They do such a great job of preserving everything they have. Obviously, they shoot a ton of film, and we see a lot of it, but think of what we don't see, and yet they don't throw it out. They keep it and archive it and go back to it years later in the case of this series about the 60s, the NFL in the 60s. So it's pretty interesting to watch, and it's Yeah, I think it's a pretty good book, too. I read the book, Keepers of the Flame, NFL Films and the Rise of Sports Media. Our thanks to Travis Vogan for joining us to talk about that. There was an announcement out here at One Bills Drive today after the OTAs ended as the Bills get set to partner with Independent Health to improve health and wellness in Western New York. And they had about 100 elementary school students, grades 3 through 6, going through the Play 60 stuff with Bills players inside the field house. The kids came from Public School 18 in the city of Buffalo. They had a great time. Watch a little bit of that. Watch them interact with the Bills players out on the field. We're going to talk about this new partnership, the Bills and Independent Health, when we return. Dr. Michael Kropp, who's president and CEO of Independent Health, will be in studio with us when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live tonight at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Along with the organized team activity today, there was another group in the field house, about 100 elementary school students from Buffalo Public School 18. The reason they're here, the Bills and Independent Health announcing their partnership to help improve the health and wellness of Western New Yorkers. And joining us in studio is Dr. Michael Kropp, the president and CEO of Independent Health. Dr. Kropp, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, John. It's great to be here.
A new partnership with the Bills and Independent Health, and they actually made you the equivalent of a first-round draft pick today, right? How did that feel?
It was a dream I never had, but it felt pretty good.
They presented you with a cap and a jersey, right?
Gave us a jersey and a draft day hat. Yep.
And you're the first-round pick when it comes to this partnership. Talk about this this partnership with the Buffalo Bills and what put it together and how you brought this together.
Well, I think that we had an opportunity to have a conversation with Russ and with Bruce to talk about what the community really needed, and the opportunity to work together as two brands that are well recognized in the community that have sort of complementary skill sets, but a similar goal in terms of having an impact on the community, particularly as it related to the health of the children of the community.
When you see the sixth graders from, or third through sixth graders from Public School 18 today, after your announcement, after you were the first round draft pick, they all got together with Bills players in the field house for essentially a Play 60 event. There, to me, there's no better way of showing how those how this brand, this Buffalo Bills brand, can influence young people than watching them interact with those kids.
Absolutely. I mean, watching the kids and seeing the smiles on their faces and imagining what they're going to talk about at dinner tonight with their parents is pretty cool.
Yeah, I watched like Aaron Williams toss balls to kids as they flop through the air, and Kiko Alonso. I mean, these are heroes to these kids, and they're out there playing around with them for an hour and a half today.
It's exactly, cool. And you know, I think that just watching this in action today gives us an idea of what the potential is. As these kids go back to school and think about making commitments to take care of themselves, to be physically active and to eat right, and part of the reward system will be their opportunity to have more interactions like today.
Dr. Kropp, what are the goals of this health and wellness partnership? What are you looking to accomplish?
Well, what we really want to accomplish is having a demonstrable, measurable impact on the number of young kids in our community that are engaging in regular physical activity and in making better decisions and choices about what they eat. So ultimately, what we hope to see is that we're going to have an impact in reversing the national trends on childhood obesity.
This is a 5-year partnership between Independent Health and the Buffalo Bills. What do you think that will be the tangible aspects of this partnership that Western New Yorkers will see in these 5 years?
I think we're going to see just an explosion of activity that not only will be taking place in the schools as part of this program, but I think that we're going to see this carried home by the kids, and you'll see the parents' engagement, and I think that you'll see more efforts on the part of block clubs and other community-based groups to provide opportunities for the kids to continue the level of engagement that they start with this program.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Kropp, president, CEO of Independent Health. The Bills and Independent Health announcing their partnership today to improve the health and wellness of Western New Yorkers. Can you talk about some of the health issues that currently face the Western New York community?
Well, we're not unique in terms of the epidemic that is crossing the country and is, in fact, extended beyond our borders as it relates to childhood obesity. And childhood and adult obesity both predispose the kids and the adults to diseases like diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and certain cancers. So we know that the nation has begun to focus on this, as the First Lady has made this a mission of her own. But yet, while you can have a bully pulpit in Washington, if we're really going to have an impact and enable kids to make better decisions, we've got to own it locally. And so I think that we can really make a difference in terms of the overall health of our community. And we've seen it before in other programs that we've done where if you can impact the kids, they'll often take that home to the parents, and behaviors will change for the entire family.
Yeah. And the Bills and the NFL, really, through the Play 60 initiative, are kind of uniquely positioned to carry that message home to kids.
They are. I think, you know, that's something that, you know, many families in the fall, they see that advertised. Yeah. They wonder about their opportunity to access it and what's it going to mean to them. It's one thing to see it on TV. It's another thing to have access to it, you know, in your own local community,
right,
and to have it be a part of your life.
You've got recent studies that show that this area, Western New York, is well positioned to be healthier and even to make healthcare more affordable for people. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, the Commonwealth Fund, which is a national foundation that is funding significant studies in healthcare, did a study recently that ranked 306 communities across the country in terms of the affordability and the quality of the health care. And Buffalo came out ranked really quite well relative to where they thought we should have been ranked. Hmm. And so they came and they did a little more in-depth analysis as to what's going on in our community. And what they found is that there's a spirit of collaboration here that doesn't exist in many other communities. And so this kind of effort that we're embarking upon with the Bills, I think, is reflective of that, that we each bring complementary brands and skill sets to the table. We have different kind of audiences, if you will. And the ability to bring all that together, I think, has synergy potential that is just spectacular.
Dr. Krabb, what are some of the things that Independent Health has done in recent years to help people become more engaged in their health and more observant of what goes on around them as it relates to their health?
Well, a lot of that work has come through the Independent Health Foundation. And so we've had a program with Fitness for Kids that has touched 150,000 kids across Western New York. And, in fact, this Saturday is the annual Fit Kids Run in Delaware Park. And we've got a record number of registrants already for that run. In addition to that, the foundation has created this Healthy Options program, which helps restaurants identify healthier recipes and to promote them to their clientele. And beyond the Independent Health Foundation, what we've done at Independent Health is bring different programs to the work sites for our customers and then set up a whole new kind of benefit structure where people are rewarded with lower cost to their health coverage by making better decisions that impact their health in terms of what they eat, whether they exercise, and they do the right things to care for themselves.
Have you always been a Bills fan, Dr. Krabb, or just recently? Because you've got some great souvenirs now with the draft cap and the Bills jersey, the draft pick jersey. If you weren't a Bills fan before, you have to be now.
I grew up a Bills fan,
okay.
And my aunt used to drive up from Elmira to go to the Rock Pile,
okay,
and come back and tell me about her experiences. So it runs deep in our family.
Yeah, how cool was it to see in the Fieldhouse today all those elementary school kids with real live NFL players? It's a sight to see.
It's a really inspiring sight to see. You know, you think about 100 kids that are out there, they're just a fraction of the kids, and the general level of enthusiasm and commitment that's there today that's going to carry out to a huge number of kids in this community. And you know, right at the time when the Bills are turning the corner and you're going to be a real force, not just here in Western New York, but in the NFL.
Well, we hope you're right. Thank you very much for coming by here. Thanks for this initiative. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Michael Krabb is President and CEO of Independent Health. The Bills and Independent Health announcing their partnership with elementary school kids, about 100 strong from Buffalo Public School 18, going through the Play 60 drills with Bills players in the Fieldhouse today. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A couple minutes left in the show. If you have more thoughts on Marcel Darius, what the Bills should proceed with as far as Marcel is concerned, the phone lines are open. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Our thanks to Dr. Michael Kropp, the president CEO of Independent Health. You heard him. And they talk about how they're going to establish a community advisory committee to guide the efforts of the Fitness and Nutrition Initiative, the Bills and Independent Health partnering up on that. Hey, we had him on the show last night, but we want to remind you, if you missed it, you can listen to the Brian Mormon interview from last night's show. In it, Brian talks a lot about his benefit run. It's coming up next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow. The Blackbird 8K and 1 mile walk to benefit Brian's Punt Foundation. It is a week from tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. at the Orchard Park Sports Complex on Mile Strip Road, the soccer field's there. You can find out all about it, registration, and how to raise money at brianmormon.org. The Brian Mormon Blackbird 8K and 1 mile walk. It is tomorrow, a week from tomorrow night, right here in Orchard Park. Yeah, the news of the day here, Marcel Darius, who is out now for the rest of the OTAs after his involvement in a car accident stemming from an apparent drag race last week. Head coach Doug Marrone said he and Darius reached a mutual decision for him not to participate in the rest of the organized team activities. The next couple of weeks, he would return for mandatory minicamp the following week, which is 2 weeks from today, when the mandatory minicamp resumes. The other news of the day, as the team returned to OTAs on the field for the fourth of the OTA practices, the return of Sammy Watkins, Buffalo's first-round draft pick from this past May, just last month. Sammy Watkins, again, sensational on the field, made a couple of great grabs, showed the burst of speed, and really began to show the beginnings of some chemistry with quarterback E.J. Manuel. Our man Chris Brown talked with Sammy Watkins about that after the practice today.
It feels good just to know that we're on the same page, that he's working, I'm working to build that trust. And I just got to keep working and getting better. Every day I'm getting faster, quicker, and learning more. I got a lot of mistakes to fix, but at the same time, it was a lot of positive stuff also.
Not that you're alone in this, but it seems like some of the receivers are saying this kind of a practice setting when they're running so many plays. I mean, in some cases, these guys run almost twice as many plays as most teams do because of the pace.
Yeah.
How comfortable do you feel with it? Are you still adjusting to it? Because it looks like it's an adjustment for almost everybody, no matter what kind of shape you're in.
Yeah, I'm used to it. We run a hurry-up offense at Clemson. We probably run 80 plays of practice, okay, and we have 24 periods. So it's definitely something I've looked into, and I've definitely been adjusting every day. I mean, everybody's tired. It's a hurry-up offense, but you still got to get accustomed to the route running and what you have to do when you're tired.
And then last one, just EJ in the huddle. What is usually, you know, in addition to the play call, is there any little extra two or three words that he's giving you guys when you're out there working on a drive?
Not really. He's a leader. I mean, you can hear it in his voice. So every day we try to come out here and be better, better people, better players. And, of course, he picked me up every day when I do something wrong. He just go to the next play, and he still come back to me and throw me the ball. So we just got to keep continuing to build that trust with all the wide receivers. I mean, today looked like the best day for the group, and we keep working and keep getting better. We're going
to
be great.
Sammy Watkins talking to Chris Brown after practice today. It was the best day for the passing offense and the 4 days of the OTA so far. And E.J. Manuel talked to the media today about reconnecting with Sammy Watkins and what that meant with him.
Sammy's a great route runner. You know, he always gives you the true route. So as long as you're on point with your drop and your footwork and everything like that, just throw it to a spot, he's going
to
catch it.
Can you speak to the measure of confidence that that gives you, even though it's so young and your guys' relationship on the field?
Right.
It just seems like you don't even give a second thought about putting it on a spot.
Right. Well, it's not just Sammy. You know, I think all those guys do a great job, you know, as far as count, you know, not counting the steps, but being step oriented in their routes. I know that's something Coach Hackett and Coach Moore, you know, really implemented for those guys when they coach their routes and things like that. So they're all buying into it. And for us quarterbacks, it's easy. You know, you just throw it to that spot and it's on them to get there.
E.J. Manuel talking about his relationship with Sammy Watkins and building that chemistry. You really saw it today. I think the passing offense was outstanding today. If you want to see more from OTAs today, from day four, from week two, you can go to our website, buffalobills.com. We've got Bills Roundup. Chris and I deal with some of the highlights of the day, including the Marcel Darius news, and you'll hear from Sammy Watkins in that as well. It's up right now at buffalobills.com. Also a feature on the partnership with Independent Health, and yeah, a lot more. Go to Doug Marrone, his entire press conference, which deals with, much of it deals with Marcel Darius. All of that up at BuffaloBills.com. That's where you go if you miss portions of our show as well, BuffaloBills.com/John Murphy Show. A couple of other NFL notes today. Dan Marino, this is odd. He was just in town over the weekend. Now he's going to withdraw from the concussion-related lawsuit against the NFL. He was one of 15 players who filed a lawsuit in federal court in Philadelphia last week, joining more than 4,800 players who have alleged that the NFL misled players about the long-term dangers of concussions. South Florida Sun Sentinel says the Dolphins legend Marino and his lawyers are going to withdraw from the lawsuit. A source told the Sun Sentinel it was never Marino's intention to initiate litigation in the case, but to ensure that in the event he had adverse health consequences down the road, he would be covered with health benefits. They're working to correct the error. Marino and his lawyers trying to discover how his name was joined to the lawsuit, according to the report. Very odd. Marino was in, now he's out. And a note from San Francisco, contract talks between the Niners and quarterback Colin Kaepernick are moving forward, according to NFL sources. The sides have been in contact previously. They met at the Combine in February, and they've got another face-to-face session coming up in the Bay Area this week. An indication that the 49ers and Kaepernick are ready to get to work on a potential deal. He's 26 years old. Kaepernick going into the final year of the four-year contract he got as a second-round pick in 2011. They could give him the franchise tag next winter, but you don't want to do that. Colin Kaepernick inching towards a long-term deal with the San Francisco 49ers. That's going to do it for our show tonight. We are back on the air tomorrow night at 7 o'clock with more coverage of OTAs and all the other Bills news. Hope you can join us then. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Mike Jafari is our engineer. Jay Harris, the producer, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Back tomorrow at 7 with the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.